Ready?
Great.
Okay, so the class that we're going to do this week is Parshat Vayera. The most exciting thing that's happening this week is Parshat Vayera. And what I want to go through today is a bigger theme, but specifically, and I want you to go through the text and see in the text that there's always what we like to call text messages. See what I did there? Right? Text messages. And there are a variety, and they can pick up a tremendous amount in the text messages. What are the messages of the text, and therefore, what are we getting from it? And so, if we open up to Parshat Vayera, which you can find on page, who's got a page?
35.
Page 35. Wow. Nice. So, sometimes things are a bit innocuous. You don't notice it. Sometimes they're very noticeable. So if you look, let's say, on the top of page 35, you'll see something in the middle of verse 15. You have to look at it on the Hebrew side. Now, what do you see at the end of verse 15? Or sorry, at the end of verse 14 before verse 15, what do you see?
I didn't get that.
Okay, page 34. I'm sorry, page 34, you look on the Hebrew side. You don't have to be that familiar, you don't have to know what it means. But if you look in the text, right, and you see this text, this page of text, at the end of verse 14 and the beginning of verse 15, there's a text message. What's the text message?
The covenant.
That's very nice. What else? You cheated because you read on the other side.
Yes.
What else? Keep it simple. What do you see between verse 14 and verse 15?
A big blank.
You see a space, right? No, that's exactly it, right? You see a space. And the space is a text message. Because if you open up the Torah and you read the Torah, you'll see a space. You see a space between verse 14 and verse 15. And you know what is, if you were had to guess what that text message tells us, what would you say?
Like quotation marks. That's important, what I'm going to tell you.
No, because that's all very nice. But if you turn the page to one page earlier, you'll see the same thing happens on page 32 at the end of chapter 17. In fact, if you turn it every single page, page 30, you'll see at chapter 15, you have a space right in the beginning of chapter 15, a space at the beginning of chapter 16.
It's referred to Sarah, both cases.
All these are very nice, right? Okay. But what is the space? If you're generally looking at if you read a book, right? Right now I'm reading Harry Potter to my son, right? It's a book with a lot of words on the page. And you see a space. What's the space telling you?
Time passed,
okay. What else?
Something important.
What else? When I'm writing an essay, right?
It's a new idea,
right? When you write an essay and you write a paragraph, remember we had took English 101, right? A long time ago, we all took English 101. And you write a paragraph, right? When you finish the paragraph and you have something new to say, then you start a new paragraph.
Right.
The Torah is no different. When you look at the text of the Torah, is that every time you see a space, it means it's a new paragraph. But the Torah is telling a story, right? Even if it's laws, it's still telling a story. And so, you need to break up with paragraphs and say this is a new topic, a new story. In fact, this is important, by the way, because often there's a question of whether or not we could make stops in the Torah, adding aliyot and things like that. Try to do that when there's a natural pause. And a natural pause is right there when there's a space, right? Sounds great. Now let's look up where we are in our text in Parshat Vayera. In our text in Parshat Vayera, we start off with chapter 18, okay? Now let's look in chapter 18. Let's look where the space is. The space begins. Okay, we assume the space begins. I don't have the Torah with me, but we could open it up. And God appears to Moshe in Elohim Mamre. And then let's look for when that paragraph ends. Let's look. It's not on page 36. It's not on page 38. It's not on page 40, except all the way on the bottom of page 40. Normally, at the end of a chapter, or at the end of a story, we have a break. But here, we do not have a break for chapter 18 and 19. The entire chapter 18 and 19, there is no break in the action, which means, what? What would it mean?
It's the same idea.
It's one idea. That's one idea. Now that would be great if it was one big fat story. Sometimes it happens. You know, like gigantic major story. It covers a couple of chapters and there's no break because the story is continuing. It's one big story. There's no paragraph that says I'm starting something new. However, in our story, let's go through what happens in Parshat Vayera during these two chapters, chapter 18 and 19, and let's see if you would think there might be an opportunity to put in a break. So for example, let's start with the beginning. A very good place to start. Page 34. I do that every time, I'm sorry. Right? Page 34. We'll use Susan's cliff notes over here on the side, right? Right? They work. Okay, so the first thing we have is, it says, visiting the sick and hospitality to strangers. We have this beautiful scene of Avraham, who is, according to the Midrash, he is recovering from the previous chapter. What happened at the previous portion, the end of the previous chapter? He was circumcised at the wonderful ripe old age of 99. 99. In Montreal, that's what they used to say. They said it like that. 99. I was nervous my daughter would say that, but we were able to get around in time. So 99, right? So he was at 99 years old, right? And he has a circumcision, and yet he still sees these strangers, and he runs to welcome them. We have this beautiful scene. Okay? That's one. Then, turn to page 37. Again, art school does a wonderful job telling us that we have more. Now, let's go through who came, who were these strangers who came to visit him? They were angels, right? They were angels. In fact, there were how many angels? There were three angels, right? Who were the three angels? What were the three angels what were they doing there? Why do you need three angels? Meaning the rabbis would say, listen, why do you send three when you could do one, right? You have to be economical, right? God sends an angel, obviously, trying to save some cash, right? But so he sends three, needs to send three, according to the tradition, because each angel could only do one mission, right? Every angel can only do one mission at a time. That's exactly, they do exactly what God asks them to do. And so we have three angels for three different missions. However, because they're all going together to the same place, they share a cab, right? So get an Uber and save money that way. Listen, you got to listen. There's always budget cuts, right? And so they all
say angels.
Malach, right? It's angel. Yes, Malach actually in English, and the translation of Malach means messenger. But it's also synonymous with the word angel, right? Malach ha-goel hotimi korah, the angel that redeemed me from all bad. That's the blessing that Yaakov gave to his children. There's a Malach ha-mavet, the angel of death. We don't like to talk about him. We have the Malach Hurricane Sandy, the angel of Hurricane Sandy. We don't talk about that either, right? So we have, this is the angels. Angels are specific majors, but here the angels actually all go three together, right? What was the role of the three angels? What were the messages? Each one has a message.
Your wife's going to have a son.
First is that they're going to have a child, right? That they're going to have a child. The second,
Sodom and Gomorrah will be destroyed.
They're going to destroy Sodom and Amorah, right? They're going to destroy, someone came, went to destroy Sodom. And the third,
you're going to another land?
Nope. What's the third mission?
That he will multiply the light of stars in the heaven.
That's great, but he already got that blessing, and they don't need an angel to do anything. The angel had to do something, right? What was the third? The third is to save Lot, right? To save Lot. Lot is in Sodom. He needs to be saved. So basically, there are two angels that are really going hand in hand, which is to destroy Sodom and to save Lot. They're partners. They have to take the cab together. That's a given. However, the first one is to inform or bless or do something to tell Avraham and Sarai that they're going to have a baby, that Yitzhak will be born. All right? And I'm going to venture to say, we'll get to that in a minute, but I'm going to venture to say that it's not coincidental that they were all three together. In other words, the two of them being together to destroy Sodom and to save Lot, they go hand in hand, right? One's doing one, the other's doing the other, really the opposite, right? But the third one is just really almost like, on the side. Oh, by the way, and give me an order of fries on the way, right? Whatever, or pick up the laundry, right? I have to pick up the laundry, I just remembered. So the third one doesn't really belong there, right? And what I'm going to try to explain is that, in fact, the third one is very much belongs there. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Let's go back to where we are again. Let's go see our story. So first we have our story of Abraham welcoming the guests. The second is that Abraham is told by that angel number three that he's going to, that they're going to have a child, Sarah, right? And then God, next it says, God's love for Abraham. God talks about the special relationship that he has for Abraham. We're going to read about this later. It's important. We'll read about this later. But basically, God says, listen, I'm going to go destroy Sodom. I need to tell Abraham first. We'll talk about that in a minute, right? And then, so he tells him this. And what do we have next on the cliff notes?
Well, Abraham starts bargaining with him.
Abraham starts bargaining, and that is where the Jewish tradition of bargaining comes from, right? Abraham says, no, maybe there are 50 people you could save. Maybe there are 40. If there are 40 righteous people, you could save Sodom, etc., etc., etc. 30, 20, 10, he continues to bargain. Now I got to tell the bad joke. But you have to beg me because it's a really bad Jewish joke. Okay, great. So, my uncle just told me this joke. It's one of these old Jewish jokes. Guy comes over to his friend and says, I have an elephant. I can sell it to you for $50. He says, $50? What am I going to do with an elephant? I live in a two-bedroom apartment. How can I possibly do anything with an elephant? He goes, but it's $50. I mean, this is a deal of a lifetime. He goes, yeah, where am I going to put an elephant? There's no way I can have anywhere to live. What would I possibly want with an elephant? He says, but it's only $50. He goes, get out of here. This is ridiculous. Whatever. He says, okay, 2 for $75. He goes, now we're talking. This all comes from this scene. Abram, the first Jew, bargains, right? The Jews can't handle bargaining. It's an old Jewish joke, right?
My mother was a very good student of his.
An elephant in the room. No, it was two elephants because it was a bargain. We got a metziah, so like to say. Right? So, sorry. That you begged me. So what are we going to do? All right. So we have Abram bargains, right? Okay. Let's continue. That's the end of chapter 18. Turn the page to page 39. Continue with our wonderful notes from Art Scroll. What comes next? We're going to read. Sodom is destroyed. Sodom is destroyed. The two angels come. It's not actually destroyed. It's that they're being sent. Right? We now don't have two angels. We now don't have three because the third one is finished. The two angels come. Right? The third one, which was going to inform Abraham and Sarah about the baby that's going to come a year from now, that's done. It has nothing to do. So he takes an Uber back home. And the other two go over to Sodom to do their job. Right? Sodom is destroyed. Lot is a perplexing hero. I like that Art School did that first. I like the word perplexing, right? And Lot is this confusing person. What's the story with Lot? Is he a good guy? Is he not a good guy? They have this whole thing back and forth. He brings the guests in. He doesn't bring them. Everybody remember the story? Lot brings the guests in.
He offers up his daughters.
And then he offers his daughters, right? So it's like a strange. And I guess Art School did a good job. He's perplexing. I generally see, I actually was more enlightened by Lot here, but if you look at the text and many of the commentaries, Lot is, for lack of a better term, Lot is one of the boobs of the book of Genesis. There's Lot, you might say Reuven, a few others who just don't make the cut. We're going to talk about that in just a minute, about Lot being not worthy. Had an opportunity, could have been something great, and at the end of the day, he wasn't. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. Okay? So we have and Lot is saved, right? And then you have the scene of Lot. Turn the page. Lot begs for a concession because he says maybe you could save the rest of the people, whatever. And they grab him. And then you have this very strange, enigmatic, kind of weird and gross scene of Lot's daughters. If you remember, Lot's daughters end up seducing him after the Sodom is destroyed. They're hiding in a cave. They seduce their father by getting him drunk. Obviously, they took some wine on the way home, because otherwise you can't leave without a bottle of wine. So when they fled, they took a bottle of wine. And it says, Lot's daughters and the birth of Moab and Ammon and the roots of Jewish monarchy, which is very nice, because that's where David HaMelech comes from the nation of Moab, because who was a Moabite? Ruth was a Moabite, and you have the rest of the story. Right. So if I asked you, would you consider this one story? Would you consider this, what we just read, chapter 18 and 19, all the highlights, would you consider this one story?
Not even close.
I just told you about five, six different stories. I mean, we can just go through them, right? The birth of Yitzhak, being informed of the birth of Yitzhak. Avram are bargaining with Sodom. The angels coming to Sodom. The story of, and destroying Sodom. The story of Lot's daughters is a follow-up to that story. It's another. There are five, six stories in here. You would think that somewhere along the way they would put a little paragraph or a little space to say, end of paragraph here, start new paragraph, new story. The fact, and second Susan, the fact that the Torah does not give a space, tells us it's a text message, to tell us that this is really all bound together. It's one big story, and we have to find the message of what is the message of the story. Yes, Susan.
Well, if you take the chapters that have the begots.
Yes.
This is like a begot chapter. As a consequence of the three angels showing up, this happened. And that's your connection.
Right. So, yes. So there is clearly a tie.
It's a common thread.
I mean, there is a common thread, right? But they're if I was telling the story, right, and then they went to Zoom, and then after they went to Zoom, and then my kid tells a story like this, right? It's like we have dinner, and it's like, are you finished yet, right? There needs a breath somewhere. You're absolutely right. There is a common thread, and it seems to be a sequence of events, but somehow there should have been a paragraph in the middle, unless there is a message.
Okay, what's the connection between Lot and getting the baby.
Okay. So that's okay. He cut to the chase and said, "What is the connection between Lot and the baby?" Which first of all, you get the lollipop for the day, and really, we sort of made a nuance before because we mentioned the story of the three angels, right? Gave a little bit of a hint. The thing of the three angels, the two angels of Sodom go together. The one angel of Yitzchak does not belong there. But for some reason, they're together. So now we have our question, very well articulated. What is the connection between Lot and Sodom and the baby Yitzchak, right? Now, what would you think would be a normal, natural connection between Lot and Yitzchak?
Well, the hero of the story relatives. Is Abraham.
The hero of the story is Abraham, that is correct.
He's involved in all of this, the birth of the baby.
So But again, we're not looking at a sequence of events. We're looking at a message. Remember, the Torah is never a history book. It's a lousy history book because it's not a history book. And sometimes even, by the way, the Torah writes things completely out of order, right? Ein muktam u'muchar b'Torah. There's no order in the Torah because it's not a history book. It's a book of messages.
But it's all interpretation.
I want to grasp out from this big, large chunk of text that clearly that they want us, the text wants to put together and say there is a message to extrapolate here. What is the message? And so the first thing we are hint is that there's some sort of connection with Yitzchak and Lot. What would the connection be? Does Yitzchak ever meet Lot, by the way?
They're relatives.
They're actually first cousins. Ah, Yitzchak and Yishmael meet at Abraham's funeral. We never hear from Lot again after this.
No?
You know, I'm sure he would have been invited. He got an invitation. Right. He got an email about it, or he saw it. It was posted, right? For sure. It was posted in one of the things, or one of those Jewish newspapers that we get, right? So we don't know. Lot is, after this scene, Lot is never heard from again. And he can't be too young at this point, right? But
right.
So he's probably a pretty old man. But we don't know. Did he die? Did not die? We don't even know. And this is an important thing because you mentioned the begot section. That's very important. We don't really have a begot section for Lot, right? We have it that he had child. We had the children here, so maybe that's his begot section. I guess maybe that would be. It doesn't really say that he died, right? The fact that someone lived and died—that's what we do in the begot. They lived, they had a child, then they died. We don't have that he died, because his life and his death became irrelevant, because he never accomplished what he was supposed to accomplish.
And what is Lot's connection to
So Lot is Abraham's nephew. And if you remember the original story, and we're going to go to that. So in the original story, it tells us that Abraham went with Sarai, Avram and Sarai, before their names were changed, right? Had to get it all legalized and new passports and everything like that, right? And then I think God was giving him a blessing, right? Now he had to change his license and his passport when he changed his name. It's really a big schlep, right? It's like getting married. I never had to do this. My wife did, right? What's that?
No, and then her son, Lot.
Right, and Haran is Avram's nephew, and Haran, so we mentioned this last week, however Haran died, however whatever, but Haran, Avram's nephew, goes with them. So that's Avram's nephew. Avram's younger brother, son, is named Lot. And Lot is a figure that kind of we travel around with throughout Parshat Lech Lecha and Ira Vayera, right? So if I had to make a connection between Lot and Yitzchak, who never meet each other, from as far as we know, what would the connection be? Well, let's go through. Avram is how old when he goes to Egypt? Sorry, when he goes to Canaan. Avram is how old when he goes to Canaan?
90.
No.
Is 75?
75. Good. She gets the points. Right? For 100 points. Now, it does tell us, or at least we make a calculation, it doesn't tell us in the text, that he's 70 when he has the covenant between the parts, which is the scene where he was told that he's going to have children like the sand of the sea, of the stars in the heaven. Look outside, you'll see the stars in heaven. So, according to most explanations, that happened beforehand, although the Torah is written out of order, right? So Avram is 70 years old, and when does he have, or 70 or 75 years old, when does he have his first child? If you hang out with me, you're going to have all these math numbers.
99 was the circumcision, and he was 13.
There you go. So Ishmael was 13, Abram was 99. Do the math. 99 minus 13 is? Nobody thought there would be higher math 86. Here. 86. He was 86 years old when he had his first child, when he had Ishmael. Right? Until that point, from the age of 70 or 75 through 86, or really from the age of however old, 20-something until... Who was the child? Who was going to be the torch? Who was going to be Avram passed the torch to? It was going to be to Lot. He didn't have a son. He didn't have any child. And God says, your children will be like the stars in the sky. Well, who did Avram raise? He raised Lot. Lot is going to be the one who carries the torch for the next generation. He's going to be the blessing. All of the blessings will come through Lot. Through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. That's Lot, right? That was Lot. And perhaps that was true, or wasn't true. We don't know. What we do know is that Lot doesn't make the cut, and there was a circumcision joke right there, right? And is not, and not that, but and obviously, so the obvious connection between Lot and Yitzchak is that Lot was supposed to be the torchbearer, and he's rejected, and Yitzchak is the torchbearer.
So that's when the angels came?
Well, not yet. Not yet. Again, when things happen is less important than what happens. Yes.
At some point, though, doesn't he say that his continuity will come through Eliezer?
Well, he asks last week in the Brit Bein HaBetzarim, he says, Lot's gone. So if Lot's gone, who is it going to be? Is it going to be my servant from Damascus? Right? So he says, no, you'll have offsprings. But for all intents and purposes, Avram's offsprings were going to... If I'm Avram, or Avram at the time, I'm thinking, I don't have any kids. Who's my kid? The kid I raised. Can I raise my brother's kid who I raised in my house, right? I took him with me throughout this whole journey. And obviously, you know, he's been through with me through day one. He came from Ur Kasdim, he came with me, he traveled with me, he's the next generation. He's the next generation. The fact that Yitzchak, I think, is the obvious connection, that Yitzchak is born as part of the destruction of Sodom and the saving of Lot, is an important point to say that Lot is out and Yitzchak is in, right? And then we're going to understand why. That's what I want to understand. Everybody with me so far? Right, that's a text message, right? There's something going on here that says that this whole scene of the angels coming to Abraham, and Yitzchak being born, and Sodom being destroyed, and Lot being saved, is all one big story. The big message that we need to take out. With that, we're going to need to step back from this week's portion and go to last week's portion. Everybody ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now.
So what does Rashi say about?
I thought you said just what Rabbi Eben says. All right. What needs Rashi? Right? I was talking here in Congregation of Ocham, which I am blessed to serve for the last 9.5 years. I believe I say that they're, that my congregants have know three rabbis, right? If you've been around for a while, you might have joined later on, but if you've been around for a while, you know three rabbis. It's Eben, Wahlberg, and Moses, right? And Moses, they're not even so sure of. Right? So I'm
Moses, what did you say?
Moses, they're not even so sure of. They never, right? That's, but I'm honored to be part of the Trinity. Yes.
So I have a question. Does the whole thing start off when Lot chooses to live in the city?
Ah, okay. Susan, you're right up the alley. So let's turn the page. You jumped. Perfect jumping. I'm glad you jumped the gun. Let's turn to page 27. Okay? Page 25, in the beginning of chapter 11, right? Wait, I'm sorry, chapter 12. We have the story of Avram and Lot and Sarai all going to the land of Canaan, right? Great. What happens immediately afterwards? Vayihi ra'am va'aretz. There was a famine in the land. Famine in the land. They had gone, started going south. And where do they end up going? It tells us, they go down to Egypt. Now, Egypt, there is no famine. Why is there no famine in Egypt?
Because
of the Nile River, right? The Nile ain't just the river in Egypt, right? So they, I'm going to roll today. it could be the snow. So the Nile River irrigates the whole area. It doesn't need to rain. Doesn't need to rain. So obviously this is, in general, if you have a land that is lush and doesn't rely on rain, you're going to do pretty well. It's going to be a very prosperous land because in that area, the weather is unpredictable. Unpredictable. So they go down to Mitzrayim, and what happens when they go down to Egypt? Remember the story?
She gets kidnapped.
She gets a sister.
The whole thing, and then it finds out that this is a bad idea. It's a bad idea. He gets a prophecy or whatever that it's a bad idea, and so it ends up. So they end up telling them to leave. When they leave, they don't just leave. They leave with a lot of riches. In fact, so much so that it even tells us the text. Let's look at verse 20, page 27, chapter 13. Okay, it tells us. Before it said, "Vayered Avram," Avram went down to Mitzrayim. Here it says, "Vayal," and so Abraham went up from Egypt. He and his wife and all that was his, and Lot with him to the south. Now Avram was very laden with livestock, silver and gold. It tells us specifically he's very wealthy. He proceeded to this journey in the south to Bethel. Went pitched his tent where his tent had been at first between Bethel and Ai, at the site of the altar which he had erected there. And Avram invoked Hashem by name. Avram called in the name of God. It's a very important thing when they say this, because that means that Avram is creating a Chabad house, basically, right? This is his new spiritual center, right? Where does Avram go after Egypt? He goes to where he was before, and he calls in the name of God. And also Lot, it says, also went with Avram, and he had flocks, cattle, and tents. And the land could not support them. There was too much. Before they were, and then what happened? They became very wealthy, right? So there was fighting between the shepherds. And so verse 8, Avram says to Lot, let there be no strife between me and you, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the land before you? Please separate from me. You need to go. Avram, after all this, and these plans, Avram says, you can't stay here. It's a huge deal, right? He says, if you go left, I'll go right. If I go right, you go left. And Lot raised his eyes and saw the entire plain of the Jordan that was well-watered everywhere before Hashem should destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Like the garden of Hashem, what's the next words? Like the land of Egypt. And he chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan. Lot journeyed from the east, and they parted theirs from his brother. Where does Lot choose to go? Right? He looks, where can I go? Right now, you would say, where would it be economically sound for me to go? So I found this area where it's quite lush, right? It's well watered. It's like the Garden of Eden. Like also Egypt. right? And so what we see at this moment is that after the scene of going to Egypt, which is the golden of Medina, right? And they come back with wealth and riches. And so what does Avram go? Avram goes to where he was before, by Yikrav Hashem Hashem, and he goes and he calls in the name of God. But where does Lot go? Well, Lot goes to a place where Lot is tainted. He goes to Vegas, right? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Lot is so enamored by money. Lot is so enamored by money that he needs to go get more. And so instead of going, now doesn't mean Lot's a bad guy. Listen, money's good, right? We recognize money. But if you become defined with money, by money, and in fact there's a text that says that Lot and all of his property, right, and his family, and makes his connection that his property and his stuff becomes a big deal, so much a part of him. Lot goes after the money. He's so influenced by the wealth of Egypt, and that he finds a place that goes really almost the polar opposite of Avram. To Lot, the Garden of Eden was Egypt. To Avram, what was the Garden of Eden? It was the spiritual center, right? It was a spiritual center. It's really how you look at the Garden of Eden. In the Garden of Eden, you never had to... Let's go back to the Garden of Eden for just a second. In the Garden of Eden, you never had to worry about anything. Food was always provided for.
Utopia.
It's a utopia. But why is it a utopia? Is it a utopia because you never have to worry about food? Or what else do we know about the Garden of Eden? The Garden of Eden is a place where God is self-evident. Right? God is self-evident. For Abraham, he sees the Garden of Eden, and he looks and he sees, and he says, oh my gosh, that's the place where I can see God at every moment. For Lot, what does he see in the Garden of Eden? Oh my gosh, I'm going to be wealthy. I don't have to worry about working. I'll never have to worry about eating again. It's two very different perspectives in one scene. And Avram takes one route, and Lot takes the other route.
Wasn't Lot raised by Abraham?
Yes.
And some of his ideas were...
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're absolutely right, because what do we see as we fast forward, and we go into the portion that we see now, and Lot is sitting at the gate, and he sees these two men coming, and what does he immediately do? He welcomes them into his house. Why? Because he grew up being raised by Abraham. Absolutely. He was a good guy. But he wasn't a great guy. Because he was tainted or too influenced by the money. Right? So Lot had the chance, but instead he goes the other way. And literally goes the other way. Completely different direction. So now we fast forward. Right? We have this scene. We have the scene of Lot. Lot, in the meantime, has been captured, right? He gets kidnapped by the four kings and the five kings, whatever. Avram saves them, right? And now we have this scene once again. And Lot is presented with another... Avram is presented with the scene, which says that he has to... What will define who Avram is and who his offspring will be? Now you could say that as we read about Lot, and you jumped ahead a little bit, Pat, but that's good, right? That maybe Lot's a good enough guy to be the torchbearer for the next generation. But it's not, because there's something missing that I want to highlight. And let's go back to Parshat Vayera. Everybody with me? Great. Any questions so far? No? Okay. We're going back to Parshat Vayera, and we have our scene on page 35. Where Avram immediately says, visiting the sick and hospitality to strangers. Avram sees the strangers passing by, right? And he immediately runs towards them. In fact, the commentaries discuss that God was speaking to him. And if you look at the text, it's not going to do it justice. If you look at verse 3, the article translates it according to this explanation. And he said, Abraham said to God, my Lord, if I find favor in your eyes, please do not pass away from your servant. He tells God, who came to visit him and appeared before him in Elon Mamre, and says, God, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I got a call. Right? And he puts God on hold I remember this, they used to have this call waiting, right? We don't do call waiting anymore, right? Call waiting. Yeah, they still have call waiting? Oh, you're right, we still have call waiting. You'd get the beep, right? You get the whatever, you go waiting and say, hold on a minute, I have another call. And you put it on hold and you're sitting there going, who's on the call? Like, what? Are they more important than me? I'm so important, what are you talking about, right? And it would drive me crazy. And then you would always ask, so who was that, right? And they say, oh, it was nobody. I'm like, if it was nobody, why were you on the phone with them for 15 minutes? Why you kept me waiting? So Avram turns to God and says, beep, I got another call. I have these schleppers, right? Who are they? They're just strangers. Strangers, travelers, and says, I got to leave you, God, because I got to go through this mitzvah. And the Talmud says, so great is the mitzvah of welcoming guests, it's greater than having a conversation with God. That's what it says from the source, right? So Avram has this conversation. He runs over. He takes care of them, etc., etc. There's a lot more here, but I'm not gonna have time for it. All right, and we get to verse. He tells them he's going to have this child. We're going to have this child. We get to verse 17. Okay, verse 16. So the men got up from there. Everybody see on page 37, verse 16. The men got up from there and gazed down towards Sodom while Abraham was walking with them to escort them, right? And by the way, Maimonides says from here we learn that the mitzvah of welcoming guests, achnasat archim, you're required to escort them out. You can't just say, okay, thanks for coming, I'll see you later. You have to actually about escort and walk them to the door, right? Otherwise, it's more than just being rude. It's, you're not even doing it. It just shows the prestigiousness of the prestige of your guests. So he says, okay, so he walks them out. He says goodbye, right? And then God said, verse 17, shall I conceal from Abraham what I do? Now that Abraham is surely to become great and a mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him, for I have loved him, because he commands his children and his household after him that they keep the way of Hashem, doing charity and justice, in order that Hashem might then bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. Why do I love Abraham? I love Abraham because he teaches his family, his children, which he doesn't have, by the way, except Ishmael at this point, right? It's not even, but he takes his household, he teaches them about tzedek u'mishpat, justice and righteousness. What have they translated? Tzedek u'mishpat? However.
Charity and justice.
Charity and justice. Righteousness and justice, whatever it is, that's what he teaches them, right? And that's why God says, tzedakah u'mishpat. That's why God says, you know what? You know why I love Abraham? And this, by the way, is probably one of the most important verses that people slip over, right? Because we always ask the question, what is it? Why did God choose Abraham? Why is Abraham chosen? The answer is this. The answer is this. It is because God teaches his family, his children, tzedakah u'mishpat, righteousness and justice, right? And for this, he says, I need to tell him what's going on with Sodom. And so he tells him what's going on with Sodom, and he goes back far. And he even says to God, right, if he says, in his bargaining, he says,
he's the son of justice.
Justice, back to Mishpat, right, justice,
he's
right.
He's giving it back.
He's giving it back. He says, God, come on, I do this, you do this. We're both people of justice. We're beings of justice, however you want to describe it. When God turns Avram down, Avram bargains and says, maybe you should save them because there are 50 righteous people there. God's like, I'll go check. But, you know, if that was the case, then he doesn't actually turn him down, but basically he does. I'll go check. And then he shows up at Lot's house. When he shows up, when the angels show up at Lot's house, so there's one word here that really defines Lot, and it's another text message. Okay, let's look on page 39. And look on the bottom of the page 39, or really bottom of page 38. It tells us that Lot, and there's so much here, like I'm like having to control myself, to not, because there's so much here to talk about. Even the idea that this, the people start storming his house, right? And they say, send us out these men so we may know them, right? And what does Lot say? And he says, I'll give you my daughters instead. Now, when I always understood this is that it said Lotus, his values are a little confused. It doesn't make any sense, right? But the truth is that they don't really take his daughters, right? They're not interested in his daughters. And you might even say, and I saw this in the interpretation, that Lot wasn't being serious. It was almost like it was sarcastic. He was saying, you know, you want to give us your guests, and he goes, and he's saying to them, I can give you my daughters, meaning I'm not really going to give you my daughters, but you, what's so important? Why do they want to get rid of these guests? Because they violate the law. The law is that you're not allowed to have guests. They're closed, a gated community, right? So Lot comes along and says, these guests are so important to me. They're as important to me as my own daughters and the honor of my own daughters, right? The people, family honor is a very big thing, especially in that, still to this day, honor is a very big thing, right? It's in these circles. When Lot says, I will violate my daughter's honor, my family honor, to protect these guests, he's not really saying it literally, perhaps. He's saying, this is as important to me as my own family honor. What you throw out and spit at, which is justice, charity, right? Doing the right, being benevolent and generous, to me, this is just as important as the honor of my own children.
Maybe the daughters were older, like old maids, and he wanted to marry them off.
Well, no, this is not. This is a band of people. It says the band of people have stormed the house, young and old, banging on the door, saying, we want, get us these people, so we will basically kill them, right? This is a complete and utter, a complete fall of all values.
There wasn't any moral sect they wanted that.
So it's interesting you ask that, because the typical thing that you'll say is that the word Sodom comes to this word Sodomim, right? And that it's something that that we're familiar with, that this is immoral things, right? And so, promiscuous relationships and things like that. That's not necessarily what we call pshat, because the reality is that when a whole group of people start banging on the door, the entire town, and saying, give us these men so we will know them, right? That's not a sexual act. That's a violent act, right? It's a violent act. And the reason why we get this assumption is because Lot says, oh, maybe take my daughters. And they're like, no, we're not interested in your daughters. We want to kill these people. That's where the assumption, that's where the idea came from. But it's likely that it's not necessarily the case, although, again, it's open for interpretation. I want to look at one text message here, one word that basically tells us where Lot loses it. Because until this point, it's not clear that he's gone, right? He's going to be saved. Why would he be saved? He'd be saved, we assume, is because he's going to be the next generation for Abraham, right? But in fact, what happens, and this is where the text gives us on the bottom of page 38. It tells us, and I'm looking at verse 15 in the English. Just as dawn was breaking, the angels urged Lot on saying, get up, take your wife and your two children who are present, lest you be swept away because of the sin of the city. And what are those words, the next three words? Still he lingered. And this word, vayit ma'ama. Ma'ama, from the word ma'huma, means confusion, right? But, and David, maybe you'll see this. What do we see if you're leaning, if you're reading the trup, what do you see on top of that word, vayit mama? You have something in the trup and the cantillations called a shalshelet. A shalshelet is the longest, probably the most dramatic trup, cantillation. On the word vayit mama, on the top, beginning of verse 17, verse 16, right? It's over still he lingered, vayit mama. It reads like this, vayit mama. There's only about three or four of them, maybe four of them, in the entire Torah. It's the same note by Joseph and Potiphar's wife, right? And there are others, a few others as well. And it tells us there's a tremendous amount of tension. And the tension is, where do I stay or do I go? And it says, still he lingered. Why? Because he doesn't know. Where is my foot? Am I foot in the house of Abraham, or is my foot in Sodom? and he can't make a decision. He has a paralysis by analysis, just like other Jewish organizations, right? And so what does he do? He lingered. So the men grasped him from his hands, his wife's hand, and the hand of his two daughters, and they took him away and bring him out. He wasn't going anywhere. He was frozen. Because when he left, what did he have to leave?
All his wealth.
He had to leave his stuff. He had to leave his wealth. And so that, which what defined him, he wasn't able to do it. And he had to be grabbed. And then his life was there. He was ready to go down with the ship. It is this decision, and really what happened before, because that whole story of him choosing to go to Egypt, to Sodom in the first place, is basically his deciding what his priorities are. The reality is that that struggle between Egypt and Israel has always been a struggle throughout the five books of the Torah. The Jews, when they leave Egypt, what do they throughout 40 years in the desert, what do they say?
It was so much better there.
Yeah, they beat us and they killed our children and they whipped us and we were... But you know what? We ate well, right? And at the end of the day, there was good food. We had a roof over our head. We had good food. Here we're in the desert, and there's no roof, and there's no food, and the food we don't like, and whatever. They longed for the prosperity of Egypt, even though it wasn't theirs, even though they were slaves, because they still longed for that. Throughout, that's been a push, this push and pull between the prosperity and the lushness of Egypt and the spirituality of Israel. And as long as the nation of Abraham, the children of Abraham, choose not the money, right? It's not about not being wealthy. It's not that the money doesn't define them. What is it that should define them? It should be defining them tzedek u'mishpat. And we go back to our original story. The contrast of Sodom and Avraham welcoming the guests are the complete opposite. They're polar opposites. Avram welcomes the guests. He rushes to them. The people of Sodom rush to throw them out. Avram is his part and parcel of who he is. People of Sodom, everything that defines them says, we don't have guests. It's against the law here to have guests. Right? They're going to kill these people because they're violating their laws. It's a law based on injustice. Avram is the complete opposite of Sodom. That's why it has to be one big story. And Lot, who would have been perhaps the progenitor of the next generation of the covenant of Abraham, is out because his foot is too far into Sodom. You need to have a family that specifically aligns themselves with those two words, tzedek u'mishpat. And I want to take one source. I want to look at one verse or one scene in the book of Kings that really helps us understand what this is all about. Now, if I asked you a question, and then Susan, we'll get to your question in a moment. If I asked you a question, right, what is the greatest period of time in Jewish history, what would you answer? The answer is Rabbi Eben's class in 2019. Mamad Har Sinai. Could be, okay, that's a good answer. So the Sinai of David's kingdom. Abraham discovering God, but there's no people there. It's just Abraham. Right? It's a great scene, right? But as a nation, what's the greatest period of time in the Jewish nation?
The Jordan into the land.
When they entered the land, before they conquered it? Maybe. The reality is, the greatest moment, and again, this is debatable, but I think the greatest moment or the greatest period of time in Jewish history that we've never gotten back to was the time of King Solomon. And I'll explain. We are a united kingdom, which immediately after King Solomon dies, 3 days later we lose the kingdom. There's a split, right? So anything afterwards, already we lost that. It can't be anything afterwards. There was a tremendous amount of prosperity. They build the temple. Nations of the world are going over to them and bringing them gifts, including Lebanon. It's never going to happen again, right? It will happen again. When will it happen again? When Lebanon will give us gifts and come to Messianic times, right? When we describe in the story of Solomon of the peak of the Jewish people in finances, in prosperity, and in the view of the world, It's King Solomon's time. There is nothing close to it. It is as close to Messianic times as it can ever describe. Now, if we know Solomon, we're kind of jaded by Solomon because he had a domestic problem, or 1,000 of them, right? But reality is that what we're describing of the glory of God and the Jewish kingdom is Solomon's times. And it's sort of highlighted by this particular scene in Kings 1, chapter 10.
And how large was
the kingdom? It was big. I don't have a map.
It went into Jordan.
I can't answer that. I don't really know exactly. But it was quite. It was where there was peace everywhere. There was no war. There was no war that we know of, right? And there was peace everywhere, including many of the countries in Africa who come to see him, including this amazing story, which is the Queen of Sheba, who comes on page 830 in chapter 10, which, according to the tradition, is the source of the Ethiopian Jewish community.
Wouldn't you say, though, that Solomon's reign, as prosperous as it was, but it was tainted because he allowed all his wives to pursue their idols?
It ended badly. It ended so badly. And what chapter does it end? Chapter 11. Chapter 11, right? Right. But until chapter 11, everything's going great. Chapter 11 is always the bankruptcy chapter, and it ends very badly. But until that point, these 8 chapters from chapter 2 to chapter 10, things are quite good. Things are amazing. And so much so that nations from all over the world are coming to see this man and to see the Jewish temple. And so, let's look at this scene in 831. It's an amazing scene. The Queen of Sheba heard of Solomon's fame, and that it was for the name of Hashem. First of all, that's just amazing also, because very often you have a despot, and the despot is all in the name of him, and here the despot is in the name of God. So it says that it was the name of Hashem, and she came to test him with riddles. She arrived in Jerusalem with a very large entourage, with camels bearing very large amounts of spices and gold and precious stones. She came before Solomon, and she spoke about him, about all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her the solutions to all their questions. There was not a thing hidden from the king that he could not tell her. The king of Queen of Sheba saw all the wisdom of Solomon and the palace that he had erected, the food at his table, the seating of his servants, the station of his attendants, and their uniforms, his drinks, and his passageway by which he ascended to the temple of Hashem. And she was overwhelmed. She was in awe. She said to the king, "True was the word that I had heard in my country about your words and your wisdom. I had not believed the words until I came and my own eyes saw, and behold, even the half of it was not told to me. You have surpassed in wisdom and goodness the reports that I have heard. Fortunate are your men, fortunate are these servants of yours who stand before you constantly, who hear your wisdom. May Hashem your God be blessed, who has chosen you to place you upon the throne of Israel. In Hashem's everlasting love for Israel, he establishes you as a king to do justice and righteousness." What is supposed to be the definition of the Jewish people, of the descendants of Abraham?
Charity.
Justice and righteousness. Charity, benevolence, and good deeds. Here is, and she said, she saw all of his wealth and his riches and his incredible power and his wisdom, and she's in awe of it. But what's really impressive? That he uses it for just as a kingdom, as a national movement for justice and righteousness. That's Abraham, the antithesis of Sodom. And that's why that whole chapter, those two chapters have to be together. Because it tells us who is Abraham and why is he chosen and who's going to be his offspring. Abraham is the one who chooses justice and righteousness, chooses God, and will raise his children to do so. And Lot, who went with Sodom, which represents the antithesis of all of this, who represents evil and injustice, that is out, and Abraham is in. That is the ultimate Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name. And that's where the whole chapters go together.